Okay, good morning, everyone. I'm going to call Human Services Finance and Policy to order. Ms. Hansen, can you please take the roll? Chair is present.
Of course, good morning. One second. Schultz present, Vice Chair Bonner. Lead Albright.
Aye.
Good morning. Representative Bolden. Oh, here she comes. Representative Brickle.
Brickle present.
Thank you. Representative Fisher.
Fisher present.
Representative Frederick.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Keel. Representative Liebling. Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Noor.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative Pearson.
Pearson present.
Thank you. Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen present.
Thank you. Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Sandel.
Present.
And Representative Schumacher.
Schumacher present.
Thank you, members. We have a quorum. Chair Schultz.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. We do have a quorum. Let's see. Representative Fisher, would you like to move the minutes from March 16th?
Yes, Madam Chair. I've reviewed the minutes from March 16th, and I'd like to move their approval.
Thank you. Representative Fisher moves the minutes from March 16th, 2022. This is a voice vote, members. I'm sorry. Are there any corrections? Not seeing any. All those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Okay, members, we have a full agenda today. The first bill we have on our agenda is House File 2725. And we have Representative Edelson with us. Welcome back, Representative Edelson. Representative Albright, would you like to make the motion to re-refer House File 2725 to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee as recommended? Nope, you're muted. Oh, we still can't hear you, Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, that is
there you go. Thank you, Representative Albright. Moves to re-refer House File 2725 to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. And I know Representative Albright and Representative Edelson worked on the task force, and I hope that you will share with us if there are other legislators that worked on the task force, and maybe describe a little bit of the work that you did with that task force. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm partnering with my my partner in the process, Representative Albright. We were not on the task force, but we essentially should have been because we've spent hours and hours on this legislation that's before you today. So House File 2725 is the result of a comprehensive work that was done by the Competency Restoration Task Force that was created by this legislature in 2019. The task force included 25 members, including NAMI, county attorneys, Department of Human Services, the State Court Administration, Hospital Association, just to name a few. This legislation before you today is Representative Albright and I have been working with stakeholders to negotiate some of the final terms. We were hoping to have the amendments done for today, but we're not quite there. We will be proposing that amendment and adopting it in judiciary. We're hoping next week. This legislation seeks to address what we know as gap cases by doing the following. It establishes standards and places many provisions from the Rule 20 into statute. It establishes a process for restoring a person to competency. It creates forensic navigators to work with defendants in the competency process and develop plans to connect defendants to appropriate services. And I think that it actually really is where this committee is going to be interacting in terms of DHS. And it also gives judges more discretion to order treatment and hold individuals who may pose a risk to public safety. Mrs. Chair, I would like to turn it over to my partner, Representative Albright.
Sure. Representative Albright. Oh, you're still muted.
That button is eluding me this morning. Thank you again, Madam Chair. Members, over the past 5 years, the number of individuals who have been found incompetent to stand trial has risen steadily. This legislation and the work that was done by the task force, myself and Representative Edelson, seeks to address what we call gap cases. A gap case is when a person is found incompetent to stand trial and a civil commitment proceeding has been triggered. However, under current law, if a person does not meet the commitment standard, they cannot be required to participate in treatment. If the charges are for misdemeanors, the charges will be dismissed, and many of these individuals will not receive help and likely may reoffend. The charges are for gross misdemeanors or felonies, the charges will be suspended. However, if a person does not meet the standard for commitment, prosecutors can only file notice and wait for a defendant to be restored to competency. Again, with no mechanism to ensure that a person receives treatment or restoration. This legislation seeks to ensure people get the care they need, that they are held accountable. And at the same time, we also address the public safety concerns for these cases and the communities that have been affected by them. Madam Chair and members, with that, thank you for listening to the testifiers and to the bill and giving it its due consideration. And with that, Madam Chair, I would refer back to my co-author, Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Representative Edelson. Hope you're muted.
We're sharing this muting situation here today. What we also want the committee to know is that this bill has undergone many changes. Right now, the bill before you shows that it's going to come through the court system. Representative Albright and I have been working with stakeholders to have it come establish a separate guardian ad litem, mimicking like the guardian ad litem board where it operates separately, but then the funds would come through the court system. Again, we will have that amendment in judiciary. This is absolutely, to Representative Albright's point, an issue that we must address this session as a state. And so, with this, I would love to move to our testifiers. We have three.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. It's my understanding that it's been through judiciary and public safety, and it's going to go back to judiciary for the amendment. Okay. So our first testifier is Sue Abderholden. Welcome back to the committee. Please state your name for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. So you might wonder why a bill focused on reforming our competency restoration system is before this committee, and I will take just a few minutes to help explain why. So when people are deemed incompetent to stand trial and then are assessed under civil commitment law, if they're committed, they're sent to a state-operated facility such as Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center. Between 2014 and 2018, the number of people deemed incompetent to stand trial increased 73%, while only 41% of those found incompetent to stand trial were actually committed. This still placed incredible pressure on our system, so that until more recently, the only way to get into Anoka was through that door. This backed up our community hospital beds when people needing that level of care could not obtain it. Additionally, there was a lack of an effective response. People with misdemeanors had their case dismissed, but some would be back in the jail in a short amount of time. I want to clarify about the gap cases. So there's kind of three types. One is people found incompetent, but who don't meet the commitment standard. Two are people who are committed, but are discharged when they no longer need that level of care, for example, at Anoka, but they're still not competent. And then the third one is people who are unable to be restored due to their disability or illness. In 2019, NAMI Minnesota did come to the legislature and was successful in passing legislation to create the Competency Restoration Task Force. I had the honor of chairing the task force, and Bill Ward, the public defender, was the vice chair. We met for 2 years, producing an interim and final report. And our task was really to identify the current services and resources that are available for individuals in the criminal justice system who've been found incompetent to stand trial, analyze current trends of competency referrals by county and the impact of any diversion projects or stepping up initiatives, analyze selected case reviews and other data to identify risk levels of those individuals, service usage, housing status, and health insurance status prior to being jailed, and last was to research how other states address this issue, including funding and structure of community-based and jail-based programs. I do want to note that Minnesota is not alone in addressing this issue. This issue is happening around the country. I want to say that this was a very active group, and we took our charge seriously. Our recommendations included building the mental health system so people never end up in jail in the first place, educate the judicial branch about community mental health services so they don't automatically think about ANOCA, limit the competency process to cases that are inappropriate for dismissal, so we're not doing competency restoration on everyone, which is very costly, and then designate a specific person to follow that, that individual and connect them to services and to develop a community competency restoration system. Once the final report was submitted last February, we actually went to work developing a bill that had consensus among the stakeholders. And we are very close to reaching consensus. And this was no easy task. And again, the key points of the bill are allowing the court to order someone to treatment without being committed. That will take care of that first huge gap. And the second is really creating a community competency restoration system, including forensic navigators that will connect the person to services before they leave jail or their case is dismissed. So they aren't just kind of lost in the wilderness, frankly, but we're really trying to make sure they're connected to things. As was said initially, we were going to place the forensic navigator and community competency restoration program with the courts, but they objected. So we thought about the counties, but they objected. And so now we have a separate agency like the Guardian Ad Litem program. It's important that you know that the focus of this bill is to get people the treatment they need to be well in our communities. We need to teach people about the criminal justice system so they can participate in their defense, but we also need to make the effort to connect them with housing, health insurance, and treatment. That will really help keep our community safe and, frankly, promote the recovery of individuals. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. The second testifier I have is Terrell Clark. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and your affiliation and then proceed.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Terrell Clark. I am a county commissioner from Stearns County. I live in St. Cloud. I'm representing AMC and MAXA here today. I, too, is a task force member, and Ms. Abderholden did a great job of going through really what is a very complicated issue. And you've got a number of bills working their way through, and honestly, all of them are important to pass in order to make headway on this. And frankly, making sure there's a decent target to be dealing with the issues here. Whether that's all the way from specific competency restoration, whether it's appropriate housing, whether it's making sure that we're coming up with new and better solutions for dealing with this issue. We support the amendment and the pathway this would put it on. We do believe there's an immediate need to reform competency restoration and enact legislation that creates a path forward for Minnesota. As you heard Ms. Abderholden say, we did the task force report that was a consensus report, really did focus on the courts. Honestly, there would not have been a consensus if it had been going to the counties, in part because we really do believe, and this amendment permits it through the establishment of a competency restoration board and office, is to ensure that individuals deemed incompetent get the competency services they need uniformly through the state, and that it does lie with the state level. We have very different counties with very different resources, some of whom don't do pretrial services, a whole array. And as you've heard, the relationship on the mental health side is a very important one to be keeping on a therapeutic level. So we think that this solution, while might not have been what we came up with originally for the task force, is consistent with the task force recommendations. And we are continuing to work with Representative Edelson and Representative Albright and others on a few other things that we're working out. But this is a really good solution, and we ask for your support.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. The next testifier I have is Dr. Kylie Stevens. Welcome to the committee again. Welcome back. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dr. Kylie Ann Stevens. I'm the Executive Medical Director for the Department of Human Services and served on the task force as well. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. DHS believes that we can implement the bill with the necessary funding granted by the legislature. It builds on the successes and works to avoid the failures experienced in other states, which often rely too heavily upon state-run inpatient beds to meet all needs. It creates a continuum of services for those who are justice involved, focusing on meeting the needs of the individuals. and utilizing DHS beds for those who require the most intensive level of care, as Ms. Abberholden earlier noted. It limits competency restoration to those who are accused of more serious crimes. Other states that have included misdemeanor cases in competency restoration have not been able to confer meaningful value for defendants because of the limited duration of their sentences, and also served to overwhelm the capacity for competency restoration beds in other states. This bill allows discretion for a provider to admit and discharge. This is something DHS views as really important. This will be key in reducing unnecessary delays and helping ensure appropriate services are provided while limiting costs. We believe it will also encourage other private providers to build capacity, something that the task force deemed as really important. And finally, the language authorizing involuntary medication expedites care and helps assure safety for others while protecting individual rights. That's all I had for today. Thank you so much for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Stevens. And then we also have Assistant Ramsey County Attorney Tim Carey here for questions. Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, I just did also wanted to recognize Mr. Carey as being available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I really appreciate the work that's been done on this topic. You know, in Otter Tail County, we have had a few very prominent cases where individuals have been found incompetent, but then fall into this gap, which creates serious concerns about public safety from community members and the community at large. And so my question, Madam Chair, I wanted to ask Mr. Carey, you know, from the county attorney's perspective, I would love to get your thoughts on this bill and what, if any, changes you believe need to be made to ensure that we're protecting the public safety element and allowing county attorneys to keep our community safe.
Mr. Carey.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. To that question, this task force bill, I was a member of the task force and I'm representing the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. Our belief is that in the three categories that Ms. Abderholden outlined, the direct referral from criminal court to treatment for people who are deemed incompetent is a wonderful offer of a solution, and the potential solutions available for people who are unlikely to be restored to competence are also better met through this bill because it contemplates a massive infrastructure build out. The second category is the area related to public risk that the County Attorneys Association is concerned about. Those are the people that are actually under the old system would be committed after a finding of incompetence, but discharged before they are competent to proceed in criminal court. The County Attorneys Association would like to build in some type of public safety analysis opportunity for the courts when people are being discharged from a hospital setting and back into the community, knowing that that these cases do involve two issues. One is a person's mental illness or substance use disorder or a combination thereof, and with a criminal case in the background. So that would be a major area by which we think we could better meet community needs.
Thank you, Mr. Carey. Representative Rasmussen, follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a follow-up for the bill author, you know, Representative Edelson, and thank you for the tough work on this bill. I know it's a very complicated topic. I just wanted to ask Representative Edelson, are the concerns that the county attorneys have outlined and the changes they've requested, will that be addressed fully in the amendment that you'll be offering at the next committee stop?
Madam Chair.
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rasmussen. I have been tirelessly working to make sure that I think everybody that is a part of our group knows how many long hours I have spent on this. Absolutely. I am trying to work to make sure that we can have a consensus bill that we can actually pass this session. And I have been working with Mr. Carey and the county attorneys to make sure we do that. And absolutely, some of what Mr. Carey is talking about will be in that amendment. I'm sure once we do have the amendment that we will have to keep talking. because there is a lot of different approaches to this. And so I think we have to look at all aspects of it. But yes, I think we are getting really close to having a complete consensus, hopefully.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. And so members of the public, a lot of the testifiers were nodding in agreement with what Edelson was saying. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Edelson, for that commitment to continue working on this and really appreciate that you're working to address some of the concerns that the county attorneys have and just appreciate, you know, my hope with this bill is that it is able to, you know, both increase access to mental health care when needed, and also better protect our communities and allow county attorneys to better protect our communities through the judicial system. And so appreciate that work, and thank you for all the testimony today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Rasmussen. Any other questions from members or comments? No. Representative Edelson, can you speak just briefly about if an individual doesn't meet the standards for commitment, the role of DHS in that situation?
Madam Chair, I think that Dr. Stevens or Ms. Abderholden would be able to better answer exactly how that would work.
Ms. Abderholden or Dr. Stevens?
Yes, under the new statute, people that were not civilly committed would not necessarily need to be served at DHS. However, for people who are incompetent and require the intensive level of services that we provide, we would serve them. So that's where the difference would lie, whereas now we serve almost exclusively committed individuals.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Stevens. I'm not seeing any other questions. Representative Edelson and Representative Albright, do you want to make some closing comments?
Representative Albright, I will leave that to you. I thank committees for their time, their committee members for their time today.
Thank you, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this is a journey and a long marathon to get to this point. I'd personally like to thank Representative Edelson for her patience and her perseverance through countless hours of trying to wrestle with some very, very difficult subject matter. This isn't only just about mental health. This isn't only about behavioral services. It also is about due process. It's also about the rights that each individual possesses and inherently so that allow them to have their day in court, but in a way that they can represent themselves and understand the implications of the charges against them, but also being humane about it and understanding that there are co-occurring conditions that might not allow them until they find the proper treatment to actually stand before a court. And one of the things that has happened in the past is that we have left these people at the end of town and with a roadmap and said, find your way home. The forensic navigator provisions in this bill allow for a person to help them find their way home to a better place and stand for what has, you know, for good or for bad. So we are has said the support that we've garnered from all the older. This is a collaborative that the state will be completing for consideration, and I urge.
Thank you, Representative Albright. I want to also thank all of the members of the task force publicly for their service and to our representatives who worked on this. We really appreciate, and we know how difficult it will be. Hopefully not too difficult to get that amendment through and get this finished across the finish line this session. This is going to be a roll call vote, so members, I hope you can support this bill and send it on to judiciary. So Representative Albright's going to renew his motion to re-refer House File 2725 to the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee. The chair votes aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright?
Albright, aye.
Wonderful. Representative Bolden?
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, aye.
Burkle, aye. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Liebling?
Liebling, aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Moeller?
Moeller, aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Novotny, aye. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Sandell?
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Schumacher, aye. Love to see it. 19 ayes and zero nays.
Okay, thank you, members. The motion prevails and the bill is being referred to Judiciary. Thank you, Representative Edelson and Albright again. Okay, the next bill on our agenda is House File 3418. This is Representative Vang's bill. Welcome back to the committee, Representative Vang. I'm going to move to adopt the division report for House File 3418 from the Behavioral Health Division. This is going to be a voice vote, members. All in favor of this motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the division report is adopted. And Representative Vang, I see you have an A2 amendment. We can adopt that. Would you like to describe the A2 amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment just adds appropriations to the bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Vang. So I will move the A2 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted to House File 3418. And my motion will be to re-refer House File 3418 to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee as amended. Representative Vang, please tell us about your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. House File 3418 works to strengthen the mental health workforce through various provisions provided in this bill. There simply aren't enough people to carry out the treatment and services to meet the increased needs. It expands eligibility for the, expands eligibility for the health professional education loan program, this program. This is not part of the presentation, but.
Ms. Vang, do you want us to come back to you? Do you need a moment?
No, I'm good.
Okay.
It establishes a mental health provider supervision grant program to pay for direct supervision of interns and clinical trainees and a mental health professional scholarship grant program to support advancement in careers and mental health professionals and appropriating money for additional training sessions for peer specialists. The Cultural and Ethnic Minority Infrastructure Grant Program and a website for mental health professionals. This bill also modifies the qualification requirements for case managers for adults with serious and persistent mental illness. And with that, Madam Chair, I will yield my time to my testifiers.
Thank you, Ms. Vang. I'm going to turn to Ms. Abderholden.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, and I want to thank Representative Vang for once again carrying a bill to address the mental health workforce crisis. We know that the mental health needs of Minnesotans are increasing, and we're finding it increasingly difficult to meet them. I did provide a handout to the committee which outlines the efforts since 2013 to address this crisis. While several of the recommendations from the 2015 report have been implemented, there are still some important issues remaining that should be addressed. The Department of Health has shared that about half of the people who graduate don't go on to become licensed. I just want to repeat that. Half of the people who graduate don't go on to become licensed. NAMI Minnesota decided to conduct a survey in December asking current mental health professionals and those on the path to becoming one what the barriers are to licensure. The most common answers were cost of the exam and licensure and supervision. After paying for graduate school, mostly taking out loans, it was just too hard to pay for supervision as well. We also know that providers who have a large percentage of their clients on Medicaid offer lower salaries and have a harder time providing supervision for free, so recruitment can be an issue. If one of their clinicians are providing supervision, they're not able to bill for that time, which is a loss in revenue. We know that many of our culturally specific providers serve a high percentage of people on Medicaid and from their community. We do not have enough mental health providers from culturally specific communities. 88.3% of the mental health clinicians are white, and we need to do better. This bill, as summarized by Representative Vang, does provide some concrete steps to help people get across that finish line and become licensed by providing free supervision, and it can be done in 2 years or less, by creating a path for people already working in the field to become a mental health professional, increasing funds for peer specialists and family specialists, creating a website that pulls together all the information about becoming a mental health professional, and increasing funds for the very effective CMIG program. I urge your support for this bill. It's so important that we continue to address our workforce crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abderholden. The second testifier is Ms. Yang from the Wilder Foundation. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Good morning, everyone. Pahua Yang with the Amherst Wilder Foundation in St. Paul. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time today. I also want to thank Representative Vang and Ms. Abderholden for their leadership in the state's efforts to build and sustain the mental health workforce. I spoke with this committee last week about the dire situation safety net community mental health providers across the state are facing. I'm here today to ask you to support the other side of the coin, which is House File 3418, supporting how we build out our workforce for now and for the next generation. We have a workforce crisis on our hands, and we must continue to have a multifaceted response. I have 3 degrees, ITs, that I like college so much, I went back twice. When people ask me what the hardest path has been in becoming a licensed mental health professional and what I wish I would have known, I often share that besides being broke for the better part of 2 decades, the hardest parts were actually going through the supervision and licensure processes. And compared to many of my colleagues, I had a pretty smooth experience. In many of the mental health fields, the entire journey of getting your degree, whether it's a master's or doctorate, is the easy part. The challenges come with realizing that the years of blood, sweat, and tears only gets you to the beginner's line. Now come the challenges of getting a job that can pay something close to a living wage, securing the right type of board-approved supervision, getting the right study materials, passing the licensure exam, and then paying for the license and exam fees, all the while often working in very intense settings with people who have many, many needs. And unfortunately, for many of my colleagues, the path becomes so difficult that they either never make it to the finish line or it takes an extraordinary amount of time and tribulation. Working in these settings requires an ability to find a silver lining. And the good news is that our current situation doesn't have to stay this way. The bill in front of you offers some salient solutions. We urgently need to grow our mental health workforce, and that means we need to find ways to make it affordable for people to go into the field, to graduate, and to find jobs so that they can serve the thousands of Minnesotans who so very much need them right now. Loan forgiveness and educational grants will help build those pathways, especially for folks who already work in the field and who have the passion and expertise to serve communities across Minnesota. As an employer, access to loan forgiveness for our staff and access to the right supervision that helps people eventually become licensed mental health professionals are all things that will help retain and recruit and retain people in our field. As community mental health providers, we often serve people who have some of the highest needs and access to the least resources. And because they believe in and love the work that we do, our providers come to us because of a commitment to our missions. But we need to be able to offer them something tangible so that they can afford to enter and stay in the field. Before I conclude my testimony, I would like to share one more silver lining. We already have folks in the community that have the passion and the knowledge to meet the mental health needs of Minnesota. Now we need a system that makes it possible for people to do the work. This bill can be a foundational piece in doing that, and I strongly urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yang, and thank you for sacrificing wealth for the good of our community and all the work you do. We really appreciate it. And thank you for testifying today. Okay, members, are there any questions for our testifiers? Well, this is a really good bill. I want to thank Representative Vang for all the work you've done in the past and on this bill as well. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would echo exactly what Representative Schultz said. Representative Vang, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I in the last couple of weeks, have listened to practitioners as well as my own sister-in-law works in the mental health behavioral sciences field. And you couldn't be more right about the barriers of getting into the practice of helping people, particularly when you have to pay for your own supervision, which I don't understand. But thank you for bringing the bill forward. Thank you for being a champion for these people. And I urge members of this committee to give it its wholeheartedly support.
Any other questions? I know this bill had a full hearing in behavioral health and had significant support. I'm not seeing any other questions. Any closing comments? If not, I'm going to renew my motion to re-refer House File 3418 as amended to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee, and this will be a roll call vote. Chair votes aye.
Schultz, aye. Vice Chair Bonner?
Aye.
Bonner, aye. Lead Albright?
Albright, aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Bolden?
Bolden, aye.
Bolden, aye. Representative Burkle?
Burkle, aye.
Thank you. Representative Fisher?
Fisher, aye.
Fisher, aye. Representative Frederick?
Aye.
Frederick, aye. Representative Hansen?
Hansen, aye.
Hansen, aye. Representative Keel?
Keel, aye.
Keel, aye. Representative Liebling?
Liebling, aye.
Liebling, aye. Representative Moeller?
Moeller, aye.
Moeller, aye. Representative Noor?
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Novotny, aye. Representative Pearson?
Pearson, aye.
Pearson, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Pinto, aye. Representative Rasmussen?
Rasmussen, aye.
Rasmussen, aye. Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Robbins, aye. Representative Sandell?
Aye.
Sandell, aye. And Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, aye.
Oh, wonderful. Schumacher, aye. That's 19 ayes and 0 nays. Chair Schultz?
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. So the motion prevails and House File 3418 as amended will be referred to Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, members. The next file we have up is House File 3896, and this is Representative Freiberg's bill. Welcome to the committee. I see that there is an A1 amendment. Would you like to describe the amendment before we adopt it?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. The amendment would consolidate some of the goals of the task force to make them clearer. It would add the Minnesota First Provider Alliance to the membership, their association of PCA providers, clarifies the definition of accessible, clarifies the definition of disability services to include a handful of non-Medicaid disability services, and it removes the word proportional from the requirements for selection of lead agencies for the pilot projects. DHS indicated that including a proportionality requirement for demographics and regions might make identifying lead agencies unworkable.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. This will be a voice vote, members. I'll move the A1 amendment to House File 3896. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative Freiberg, to your bill as amended, and my motion will be to lay over House File 3896 as amended for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Many people who have disabilities who use disability services find the processing of accessing those services incredibly difficult. Although disability services are aimed at supporting people's disability-related needs, sometimes the process of receiving and maintaining those services presents barriers because of people's disability-related needs. Some of these barriers can include completing paperwork, which sometimes requires outdated or specific methods such as faxing, communicating with lead agencies, which is often prescribed to occur in specific ways without flexibility, participating in assessments, which may favor certain communication methods and not leave room for communication or interaction accommodations, and resolving disputes about service determinations, which often results in frequent appeals that may have been avoidable. House File 3896 would bring together stakeholders to assess and identify accessibility barriers in accessing disability services. The task force will also monitor progress on several pilot projects aimed at improving accessibility, including pre-decision review process for disability services, determinations to reduce the need for appeals, exploration of using less frequent assessments for people whose disability-related needs are unlikely to change, use of electronic communication between participants and lead agencies, and use of a peer navigator program to support participants. There's a coalition of organizations that are supporting this legislation. It includes the ARC of Minnesota, the Autism Society of Minnesota, Legal Aid Disability Law Center, Minnesota CCD, Multicultural Autism Action Network, and the PROOF Alliance. With that, I'd be happy to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. The first testifier I have is Jillian Nelson. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name, your affiliation, and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Schultz and committee members. I'm Jillian Nelson. I'm the Community Resource and Policy Advocate at the Autism Society of Minnesota. I am also an autistic adult and a participant in Ramsey County Disability Services. I will tell you, most days my work here on the Hill is simpler, more streamlined, and effortless when compared to the process of applying for, navigating, and maintaining my disability services. Disability services are the only program in Minnesota that 100% of the participants are people with disabilities. And currently, it is one of the least accessible programs Minnesota offers. House File 3896 can change that. It brings together a valuable group of stakeholders, and it starts unpacking the process to identify the barriers across the entire system so that we can make corrections for the system instead of just patching one micro problem at a time. This task force is unique in Minnesota because it's combined with a fantastic set of pilot programs that can begin to shape a new era of accessibility. These pilot programs are intuitive fixes, communication before denial to help reduce the need to appeal decisions, electronic communication options because it's not always accessible for people to fax paperwork, and offices are closed to the public still. Less frequent reassessments for people with disability-related needs that aren't likely to change, and peer navigators to offer support and guidance along a very complicated path. Yesterday, I sat in a meeting with a member of this committee discussing the need for this task force, and I received a text message. It was from a colleague of mine, and it was advising me that a local autistic woman was in the ICU after a suicide attempt. Because navigating the system to get a waiver and the support she needed was too much and too long and too hard. And I think the most heartbreaking part for me of this is that I had already that morning sent a letter to this community from a mother who lost her son to suicide when he went through a similar fight to access medical assistance to get mental health support. This outcome is happening far too often. For too long, the disability community has been the one to bear the burden of consequence for the lack of accessibility and the administrative errors in how the state and county are administering disability services. I truly believe DHS means well when they make changes, such as Waiver Reimagine or MinChoice 2.0, and I believe that they believe it will make the system more accessible for people. But that is a demonstration of why this is necessary. When administrators think about reform, it is far too often how to make the system work from an internal perspective. But what we need is to make this easier for people being served to navigate the services. The solution to the accessibility challenge before us is not going to be a simple answer. But the choice to include people with lived experience and the community is simple. We know the challenges the system presents. We know the challenges the world presents. We know what we want for our lives and the things we need to survive. We know what accessibility looks like and what accessibility means to us. We should be a part of the solution. And that is what the Task Force and Pilot Program aim to do. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting House File 3896. And I myself and Maren Holden are available for any questions.
Thank you, Jillian Nelson, for the work you're doing with the Autism Society and for testifying with us today. The next testifier I have is Katie Barton. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation and then proceed with your testimony.
My name is Kate Barton. I'm a member of MNCCD. My name is Kate Barton. I'm an autistic adult and self-advocate. I live in Hugo. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 3869, the Accessibility Task Force and Pilot Projects. This important piece of legislation will help improve access to essential services and remove barriers to receiving them. Access to essential services for people with intellectual disabilities are what helps to make us contributing members of our communities. If we face barriers to these, we will not have the opportunity to do the same things as community members without disabilities. I personally have experienced barriers when it comes to receiving services. The first one is the amount of paperwork required to access them. My mom spends hours, sometimes weekly and monthly, to ensure that she has filled out every piece of paperwork correctly. She even has created a binder for my siblings for them when she dies so they know what to do because it is so complicated. The time required it takes to ensure it gets done on time, too. We make sure they're due before it is due. Sometimes a worker calls and says she either never receives it or it was late. We always go to the post office and send the huge envelope pasted on the paperwork, sort of had mail with signature required on her end. That way we know that it was received, which costs us time and money. But when we get this call, my mom is left scrambling to fix it, so I don't lose my essential services, which is my health insurance or food stamps. The paperwork was streamlined, and we were able to report this online. We were able to prevent the workers from saying that they never got it or they lost it. We'd also save caregivers a lot of time, money on our end, prevented wasted time from going back to the post office. Contributing to the virtual meetings would be also a lot easier for us. And for the workers, they would not have to lose time for travel. The system is very hard to navigate for a person without a disability. I can't imagine having to navigate it on my own. I'm glad that I have a family and caregivers will need to do that. For me, I can't imagine how they do it on my own. You shouldn't need a degree to fill out your paper for receiving your services. This is my binder that my mom fills out monthly. It has all the services for my siblings when she dies, so they understand how important it is for them to fill out every piece of paper correctly so I don't lose my services. What needs to be done, where it needs to be sent. They always laugh at renewal time when they ask if my disability has gone away. No, it will never go away. This is one question that needs to stop being asked. Just because I learn new skills doesn't mean my autism hasn't gone away. It will be with me until I die. I encourage you to sign on to this important piece of legislation so people like myself can continue to have access to service barrier-free. And services that are not restricted. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me. Jillian and myself and Maren are here for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Kate Barton, for testifying today and showing us an example of some of the barriers that you have in your life, and I'm sure others share as well. So I'm glad Representative Freiberg brought forward this bill, and we do definitely, a goal is to reduce barriers so people can get the services they need. Are there any questions from members? Not seeing. Oh, Representative Albright.
Madam Chair, thank you again, and to Representative Freiberg, thank you for bringing this bill forward. It's really troubling to me that over the years that I've been in my tenure in DHS, relationship with DHS, we hear about, you know, the number of reforms that have been spoken of. But this is the first real glimpse into why those don't work. And the reason being is because they are not patient or client-centered. And I think the provisions in this bill start to address the reality of the situation that when you're looking for treatment and you don't know which door to open first, and candidly, once you open that first door to enter into the building, you have no clue as to where you need to go next. And my heart goes out to folks like Jillian and Marin and Katie. There is supposed to be a humility in the service to those that are in the shadows of life, that are just looking to make a best day of it, to promote themselves. And I applaud their efforts in, you know, pulling back the curtain and giving us a glimpse into the difficulties of dealing with one of the largest, most bureaucratic-laden entities and agencies that this state affords. And so, Representative Freiberg, I'm a co-author in your bill, and I will make every effort to make sure that this becomes law. And with that, I'll close my comments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Albright, and I hope you will work with us as well to reduce a lot of the paperwork that has to do with eligibility that a lot of my Republican colleagues usually are fans of, but I think also that there's federal barriers. So hopefully we can all work together and reduce those federal requirements as well. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you pretty much said what I wanted to say, and that is that, you know, while we know that there are barriers, and I really appreciate hearing from the testifiers, you know, we know that there are always barriers. Some of them are fiscal barriers. We have some bills. I'm carrying a bill to make more people eligible who have disabilities and not treat them worse than we treat other people in terms of getting into the program. But there are a lot of problems. You know, there's like a pendulum that goes back and forth here between accessibility and getting everybody covered. And then there are also a lot of other things that DHS has to be concerned with. Things like licensing standards, making sure that eligibility standards are maintained because a lot of money goes into this area and so on that Chair Schultz referred to. So this is it's a very difficult thing to align everything to be to satisfy all of the different concerns that are out there. And I think it's always good to keep looking at our programs and the way we do things because they need continual adjustment. The ground under us is shifting all the time in terms of eligibility and money available and the way people want to use services and have them available. So I think it's great to look at this, but I think that the criticism of DHS as an organization is a little bit too much, and not I think they are making efforts. I think they do care a great deal, and I think that there have been a lot of strides forward, at least in the time that I have been in the legislature. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. Representative Freiberg, any closing comments?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Chair Liebling, for your comments. I think those are helpful just to kind of keep us grounded here in the issue. And thank you also, Representative Albright. I really appreciate your comments and your support for the bill. I think it addresses a really important issue that really affects people with disabilities. I think it could lead down the road to them having a better experience working with disability services. So appreciate you considering the bill, and I'm hopeful it will appear later.
Thank you, Representative Freiberg. So, motion will be to lay over House File 3896. as amended for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. Okay, members, last bill on our agenda is House File 3919. The motion is to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. And I see, Representative Mueller, that you have an A1 amendment. Would you like to quickly describe that before we adopt it?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yes, quickly, the A1 amendment simply changes the timeline for stakeholder engagement, and it reflects DHS's technical assistance.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. So members, this will be a voice vote. I move to adopt the A1 amendment to House File 3919. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the motion prevails and the A1 amendment is adopted. Okay, Representative Boulder, tell us about your bill as amended, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 3919 proposes that DHS will work with stakeholders to develop recommendations for establishing life sharing as a covered medical assistance waiver service. Life sharing is a nurturing and supportive family-style living option for adults with disabilities who are 18 years or older. Individuals participating in life sharing services are carefully matched with an individual or family who share their life and experiences and support them using person-centered practices. Life sharing combines the benefits and enjoyment of living in a family home with the support to lead an independent life in community. Currently, life sharing is not a formal waiver service in Minnesota, and while similar supports can be accessed using existing disability waiver services, this has created barriers to accessing this service for individuals and providers. The robust stakeholder engagement process and required topics in House File 3919 will help remove these barriers and increase access to this person-centered, community-based, and culturally responsive support for Minnesotans with disabilities. The one-pager for this proposal provided to members includes a list of partners in support of the bill, and there are also additional letters of support in your packets. And with that, Madam Chair, I have two testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. The first testifier I have is Alyssa Dott. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name again and your affiliation and then proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Alyssa Dott and I'm the Senior Director of Host Homes, Care Coordination, and Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services at Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota. Since 2011, LSS has been providing life sharing services. Life sharing, or host homes as we call it at LSS, is an independent contractor model of support. LSS strives to find families and people who are willing to open their heart, home, and share their experiences with a person with disabilities. After a robust matching process and everyone agrees that it would be a good fit, the family contracts with a life sharing agency. Each team member has different roles and responsibilities, and the role of the life sharing agency is to hold the 245D license, provide oversight of plans, goals, and outcomes, provide training, ensure compliance, and be an overall support to both the individual served and the family. The family's role is to provide the day-to-day support to the individual and help them achieve their hopes and dreams. I like to think about it like this, that the life sharing agency does a lot of the behind-the-scenes work while the family gets to focus on helping the person live a great life. Life sharing is a proven model, and research shows that by living with a family, a person with disabilities has the opportunity to participate in all desired aspects of family and community life. In comparison to other service settings, people who live in host homes have more outcomes present in the following areas. People have the best possible health. People experience continuity and security. People participate, interact, and are integrated into their community, and people realize their goals. Bringing together a formal stakeholder group will allow us to build on our partnership with DHS and co-create a service together that more closely aligns with the widely recognized life-sharing service. Next, you'll get to hear from Larry, a person supported who lives in a host home. Thank you, Representative Mueller and committee members, for your support of this bill. We are hopeful that it will increase awareness, accessibility, and viability of person-centered, community-based, and culturally responsive supports for Minnesotans with disabilities.
Thank you, Ms. Dott. The next testifier is Larry Bale. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name, your affiliation, and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the committee. My name is Larry Bale. I am currently living in a host home And as part of the host home, I am going to be there for over a year this April. Another part of the host home is a living is I got to make new experiences and create new relationships. Another part of the living in a host home is it has changed my life for the better. Another thing about living in a host home is that I get to have more freedom to do things. Go to church, go to Lions Club, and go to Area Men's Choir. Right now, we are in hiatus. Another thing about living in a host home is I love to travel. And another thing about living in a host home is I got to meet my host home family, and they are now members of my extended family. I want to thank you all for listening to me, and I hope that if anybody wants to live in a host home, they should come out and take part in all the other things that shared living does and meet the people who have organized this thing. Thank you very much for having me on the committee. Your friend, Larry Bale.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bale, for sharing your experience, and we're so glad that you're enjoying your host home. Maybe someday you can come back and have your choir sing to the legislature. Are there any questions from members? I'm not seeing any questions. Representative Moeller, closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Mr. Bale really said it best when he said it changed my life for the better. I can't add anything more to his fantastic testimony as to why this is needed. And I appreciate you hearing the bill today and look forward to member support.
Thank you, Representative Moeller. With that, members, House File 3919, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in our Human Services Omnibus Bill. So members, thanks a lot for attending this week. I know we have one more week before the first deadline, so we'll be hearing a lot of bills next week. You did get an announcement about a possible Friday hearing. I believe it's set for 8:30. Just check your email for updates on the agenda. And everybody have a great rest of your day and weekend, and I hope you can enjoy the warm spring-like weather this weekend. And with that, members, we are adjourned.